morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Friday, June 2nd, 2006. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Jake Wallner.
Coming up on the KBOO Morning News, community advisors seek an alternate to a toxic sediment dump along the Willamette River. Environmental health watchdogs challenge the EPA's, quote, industry-friendly, unquote, pesticide rules. And villagers complain of nuclear waste from the Pakistan Atomic Energy Commission contaminating their environment. Today's Portland area weather, showers lightly, highs 65 to 70. Tonight mostly cloudy with a chance of showers, lows 50 to 55.
Governor Ted Kulongoski will host Salmon Summit 2 tomorrow in Newport. The event is the follow-up to Salmon Summit 1, which Kulongoski hosted in anticipation of a federal closure of the commercial salmon fishing season along most of Oregon's coast. Shortly after the first summit, the federal government closed nearly all the coast to commercial salmon fishing for the season, while leaving open most areas for recreational fishing. Friday's event will highlight actions taken to date by state and federal government agencies to soften the economic impact of closing the commercial season. Kulongoski will kick off the event with a summary of state action to implement the conclusions reached in Salmon Summit 1, after which he will introduce representatives of state agencies who will report on their progress and future plans. The event will feature a roundtable discussion among the key people affected most directly by the closure, including people put out of work by the federal action and representatives of the fishing industry and local citizens, local government leaders, congressional staff, and coastal state legislators also will participate. The all-day summit will take place at Newport City Hall, 169 Southwest Coast Highway, Newport. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
The biggest personal income tax kicker in Oregon history may be coming to taxpayers in 2007, thanks to a surging state economy. But Governor Ted Kulongoski proposes suspending the refunds. The projected $883 million tax refund would amount to about $175 for every $1,000 in personal income taxes paid in Oregon. But Kulongoski said he'll ask the legislature to suspend the kicker for the next 6 years and reinvest that money in the state economy. Ron Saxton, the Republican challenger to the Democratic governor, said Kulongoski was proposing what amounted to an $883 million tax increase. Kulongoski says the choice is about reinvesting money in a state struggling to fund schools and health care. Kulongoski said Oregon is competing with other states in a global economy, and reductions in services such as education and health care make the state less attractive to business. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
A vaunted tree protection committee in Portland is suddenly leaderless. Started with what looked, at least to the city ombudsman, like a simply a neighbor notification plan. But the volunteer head of the program, claiming her committee was left out of the loop, has resigned in protest with, she says, some of her colleagues. It all began with an idea that might have seemed simple in a city where trees are special. Some trees, in fact, are more special than others because of seniority or size or related qualities. They become heritage trees, and during the past dozen years, about 270 have been nominated and approved for that protected status as part of Portland's efforts to keep a canopy of green. After a resident complained that she had not been told that a neighbor's tree with parts over her property was a protected heritage tree, City Ombudsman Michael Mills proposed this plan. When the city nominates a tree for protected heritage status, meaning in part that it cannot be pruned without approval, the city will take the extra step of also giving notice and allowing comment from owners of next-door properties where parts of the tree reach over. This from the Oregonian.
Just weeks after the Environmental Protection Agency approved construction of a toxic sediment dump along the Willamette River, community members are hoping scientists and industry will produce an alternative for the rest of the cleanup. Community advisors on the Portland Harbor Superfund site want the EPA to consider alternatives to capping or dredging and burying sediment. On Saturday, they're holding a public workshop on new technology that would treat the sediment and separate out or destroy pesticides, mercury, dioxins, and other contaminants. The meeting, moderated by the EPA sediment expert, will be at the Portland BES Water Laboratory under the St. John's Bridge in St. John's. although two earlier cleanups of a Gasco tar body and contaminants at the Port of Portland's Terminal 4 have called for dredging and burying the toxic sediment. Plans are not complete on how the remaining 6 miles of the Superfund site will be cleaned up. The workshop is sponsored by Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group, the Oregon Center for Environmental Health, the EPA, Northwest Environmental Business Council, and the St. John's Neighborhood Association. This from the Oregonian.
Portland Public Schools internal auditor is quitting after 5 months. Sarah Landis is saying district officials and the board didn't give her enough independence to meet professional standards. Landis will step down tomorrow to take a job with Multnomah County, her former employer. The district's auditor position reports to the school board, but Landis said she'd been told to request information and run purchasing and training requests through the district's general counsel, Jolie Patterson. She said the arrangement compromised her watchdog role. In a statement, the district said the board is still firmly committed to increasing accountability, noting that the board employed Landis, but she had to have a board secretary sign her timesheets and purchase orders. The district also released a memo from board member Doug Morgan, chairman of the district's audit committee, that said Landis wanted at-will access to all district budget, personnel, and other data banks without notification. Multnomah County Auditor Suzanne Flynn, Landis's former boss, and Portland City Auditor Gary Blackmer backed up Landis, saying she's tactful on the job, but bumped into unnecessary walls. This according to the Oregonian.
As the city wraps up its investigation into allegations of sexual misconduct and abuse of power against Police Chief Derek Foxworth, his lawyer says she's confident that he'll be cleared of wrongdoing. According to Anna Canmet, Deputy Director of Portland's Bureau of Human Resources, Portland has completed the investigation after interviewing Foxworth 3 times and his accuser, Civilian Desk Clerk Angela Oswald, 2x. The report will not offer any recommendations, but the mayor is expected to make a decision on Foxworth's future by early the following week. Paula Barron, one of Foxworth's lawyers from Portland labor and employment law firm Barron Lieben, said the chief is eager to tell his side. The city has ordered him not to discuss the case during the investigation.
Aluminum mills in Washington, Oregon, and Montana will get millions of dollars from the Bonneville Power Administration to buy cheap electricity over the next 5 years. The BPA said the deal also provides electricity for Port Townsend Paper Company in Washington State. Mike Hansen, a BPA spokesman, said the deal will improve chances that the aluminum smelters battered by high electricity prices will operate in the future. Beginning this fall, BPA will provide $59 million per year to the aluminum companies that will allow them to buy up to a daily average of 560 megawatts of electricity for a year on the open market. The BPA for decades provided electricity directly to the aluminum companies, but now wants to save its power for other customers, such as public utility districts. The BPA was not required to help the aluminum companies, but the decision recognized that the companies have been steady customers of BPA for decades, Hansen said.
A contrite U.S. Army Corps of Engineers took responsibility for the flooding of New Orleans by Hurricane Katrina and said the levees failed because they were built in a disjointed fashion using outdated data. Lieutenant General Carl Strock, the Corps chief, said, "This is the first time that the Corps has had to stand up and say, we've had a catastrophic failure." The agency issued a 6,000-page report yesterday on the disaster on the first day of the new hurricane season. The Corps said it will use the lessons it has learned to build better flood defenses. "Words alone will not restore trust in the Corps," Strock said, adding that the Corps is committed to fulfilling our important responsibilities. The nearly $20 million report includes details on the engineering and design failures that allowed the storm surge to overwhelm New Orleans levees and flood walls last August.
A federal judge will go ahead with hearings in a legal challenge to a warrantless domestic surveillance program run by the National Security Agency. This according to the Detroit News. U.S. District Judge Anna Diggs Taylor also criticized the Justice Department for failing to respond to the legal challenge. The NSA and the Justice Department declined immediate comment. The Bush administration has said that hearings would reveal state secrets that affect national security. The American Civil Liberties Union in Detroit and the Center for Constitutional Rights in New York filed lawsuits against the program in January, saying it violates Americans' rights to free speech and to privacy. The government filed a motion saying that no court can consider the issues because of a privilege against revealing state secrets. If doing so harms national security, the judge said she will hear the government's motion only after proceeding with the June 12th hearing on the plaintiff's motion to summarily declare the spying illegal.
In a radical departure from earlier statements, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez has said that requiring internet service providers to save records of their customers' online activities is necessary in the fight against terrorism. This according to CNET News. Gonzalez and FBI Director Robert Mueller privately met with representatives of AOL, Comcast, Google, Microsoft, and Verizon last week and said that internet providers and perhaps search engines must retain data for 2 years to aid in anti-terrorism prosecutions. Gonzalez's acknowledgement represents a departure from earlier statements that emphasized how mandatory data retention would help thwart child exploitation. Gonzalez's earlier position had only emphasized how mandatory data retention would help with the exploitation. Details of the Justice Department's proposal remain murky.
Henry Paulson, President Bush's choice for Treasury Secretary, likely will soon find himself pledging to work on behalf of a strong dollar and a smaller government deficit. After all, how could a Treasury Secretary support a weak dollar and proliferate deficit spending? But circumstances are bound to conspire against Paulson. Market forces are aligned to drive the dollar's value down, no matter how many administration officials talk it up. The dollar is under downward pressure from several factors. For one, the enormous and growing U.S. trade deficit is creating a huge supply of greenbacks abroad, as the United States ships hundreds of billions of dollars overseas every year to buy foreign goods. The greater supply of dollars reduces their value. So far, foreigners have invested most of those dollars back in the United States, but economists warn that their appetite for American investments has its limits, and that when those are reached, dollars will lose their appeal and their value.
When President Bush showed up at a Baltimore-Washington International Airport hotel Wednesday night for a fundraiser for the Maryland GOP, he found that the party's top-of-the-ticket candidate had already boarded a plane and left town. Maryland Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele, the party's U.S. Senate candidate, joined the list of Republicans who had to be somewhere else when Bush came to town to raise money for the GOP. Steele, instead, was at a fundraising event in Las Vegas. Nothing personal, Steele's spokesman Doug Hay told the local Baltimore Sun. The candidate had a long-standing previous commitment to attend the Vegas event at the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino. This from Raw Story.
President Bush will promote a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage on Monday, the eve of a scheduled Senate vote on the cause that is dear to his conservative backers. The amendment would prohibit states from recognizing same-sex marriages. To become law, the proposal would need two-thirds support in the Senate and House and then be ratified by at least 38 state legislatures. It stands little chance of passing the 100-member Senate, where proponents are struggling to get even 50 votes. Several Republicans oppose the measure, and so far only one Democrat, Senator Ben Nelson of Nebraska, says he will vote for it. The Senate Judiciary Committee approved the amendment on May 18th along party lines after a shouting match between a Democrat and the chairman, Senator Arlen Specter. He bid Senator Russ Feingold good riddance after Feingold declared his opposition to the amendment and his intention to leave the meeting. A slim majority of Americans oppose gay marriage, according to a poll by the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press from March. But the poll also showed attitudes are changing. 63% opposed gay marriage in February 2004, this according to Reuters.
Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW, has received notice from the Federal Election Commission indicating that in response to a complaint, filed by Crew, the FEC found that Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist's 2000 Senate Campaign Committee, Frist 2000, violated federal campaign finance laws. Raw Story reports that Crew's complaint alleged, and the FEC agreed, that Frist 2000 had failed to disclose a $1.44 million loan taken out jointly with Frist's 1994 Campaign Committee, Bill Frist for Senate. The result of the discrepancy was to make it appear that Frist 2000 had significantly more money than it actually had. The Federal Election Campaign Act requires full disclosure of any loans taken out by campaign committees. Melanie Sloan, Crew's executive director, said, "It is gratifying to see that the FEC recognizes that Senator Frist's campaign committee broke the law. Apparently, the FEC disagreed with Senator Frist's aide's dismissal of the complaint as incorrect and politically driven."
Lee Raymond, the chief executive of ExxonMobil, has bowed out from the oil giant with a $400 million pay and retirement deal that has caused outrage among environmentalists. In his 12 years at the top of the company, Exxon has pumped an estimated 6 billion tons of carbon into the atmosphere and has led the opposition to action on climate change. Investors and environmental campaigners condemned the retirement package for the boss of ExxonMobil, the man known as the Darth Vader of global warming, for his denial that carbon emissions cause climate change. Protesters descended on the annual shareholder meeting of the world's largest oil companies in Dallas, Texas, amid fury over the lavish lifestyle that it plans to fund for Lee Raymond. Exxon has been condemned by green groups for fueling the world's addiction to oil by opposing the Kyoto Treaty on reducing emissions and refusing to invest a penny in alternative energy sources. The total amount of carbon released into the atmosphere by the production and use of Exxon's oil and gas output is calculated at 500 million tons a year, or 6 billion tons during Raymond's tenure. Raymond has funneled $19 billion of Exxon's money to groups that question the science of global warming. His package of pension and perks includes a bodyguard, a car, and a driver, and the use of a company jet.
Two recent actions by environmental health watchdogs foreshadow a showdown between corporations and public interest advocates over the safety of toxins marketed as pesticides. The tension between EPA's internal dissenters and the industry is mounting under a looming deadline for the scientific assessment of two similar classes of pesticides, organophosphates and carbamates. The assessments are intended to establish safe levels of human exposures. The EPA has been evaluating pesticides in the two groups for several years, and about 20 chemicals are still waiting final decisions by an August 3rd deadline. In their letter, the EPA scientists and employees argued that many of the risk assessments of previous years had cut corners. Citing the need for further research, the authors called on the agency to stop approving the use of the remaining organophosphates and carbamates in the reassessment process until the EPA can state with scientific confidence that these pesticides will not harm the neurological development of American children. But environmental groups have denounced the EPA's protocol as rife with ethical loopholes, suggesting it prioritizes the industry's interest over science in the public interest. This from the New Standard.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger agreed yesterday to send the National Guard to the Mexican border, ending a 17-day standoff with the Bush administration. The two sides had been at odds over whether California Guardsmen would join the effort to bolster the Border Patrol and who would pay for it. They reached an agreement under which California will contribute about 1,000 guardsmen for border duty and the federal government will pick up the full cost. However, in a separate act that was not part of the agreement with the federal government, Schwarzenegger will sign in an executive order that ends the California National Guard's participation on December 31, 2008. Schwarzenegger intends for the mission to be carried out mostly by troops who volunteered for 6 to 12 month assignments. The Bush plan called for sending guardsmen on border duty instead of their annual 2 and 3 week training exercises.
The Bush administration is blocking key proposals for a new United Nations package to combat AIDS worldwide over the next 5 years. Heavily influenced by the Christian right, the administration is opposing the distribution of condoms and needle exchanges. It also is trying to block all references to prostitutes, drug addicts, and homosexuals in public health publications. The United States is being supported by many Muslim countries and various conservative African and Latin American nations. Although the U.S. is the world's highest spender in combating the virus, much of the money goes towards sex abstinence campaigns rather than the distribution of condoms or needle exchange programs. The U.S. is also opposed to increased funding targets. Although the summit overrode the U.S. funding objections yesterday, the U.S. is still insisting on that conditions be attached to the aid. The American agenda is being opposed by the Europeans. Fraught negotiations continued yesterday to try to salvage as much of the funding package as possible. More than 140 nations are attending the UN summit in New York this week. This according to The Guardian and The Washington Post.
Military prosecutors plan to file murder, kidnapping, and conspiracy charges against seven Marines and a Navy corpsman in the shooting death of an Iraqi man in April. The eight men are being held in the brig at Camp Pendleton Marine Corps Base north of San Diego. The Iraqi's death was unrelated to the shootings of as many as two dozen civilians in the western Iraqi city of Haditha in November. The Pentagon is investigating troops from a different Marine regiment in that case. The men being held at Camp Pendleton served in Iraq with the 3rd Battalion, 5th Marine Regiment, and are members of the battalion's Kilo Company. The highest ranking among them is a staff sergeant. Separately, another group of 5 Marines in the Kilo Company, including a lieutenant who commanded the platoon, are under investigation for injuring a suspect in their custody, according to a defense attorney who has been contacted by the family of one of the Marines. He spoke Thursday only on condition of anonymity because he has not taken on the case. The Iraqi man was killed west of Baghdad on April 26, but few additional details have been released about his death.
A military jury yesterday convicted an army dog handler of using his animal to torment a prisoner at Abu Ghraib. Sergeant Santos Cardona is the 11th soldier convicted of crimes stemming from the abuse of inmates at the prison in late 2003 and early 2004. Cardona was convicted of dereliction of duty and aggravated assault for allowing his dog to bark within inches of a prisoner's face. Prosecutors portrayed Cardona as part of a small group of corrupt soldiers who enjoyed tormenting prisoners. No mention was made of how far up the chain of command the corruption actually extends.
The BBC has uncovered new video evidence that U.S. forces may have been responsible for the deliberate killings of 11 innocent Iraqi civilians. The video appears to challenge the U.S. military's account of events that took place in the town of Ishaqi in March. The U.S. said at the time 4 people died during a military operation, but Iraqi police claim that U.S. troops had deliberately shot the 11 people. Spokesman for U.S. forces in Iraq told the BBC an inquiry was underway. The new evidence comes in the wake of the alleged massacre in Haditha, where U.S. Marines are suspected of killing up to 24 Iraqi civilians in November 2005 and covering up the deaths. The U.S. military has announced that coalition troops in Iraq are to have ethical training following the furor surrounding the alleged killings. U.S. authorities said they were involved in a firefight after a tip-off that an al-Qaeda supporter was visiting the house. According to the Americans, the building collapsed under heavy fire, killing 4 people, a suspect, 2 women, and a child. But a report filed by Iraqi police accused U.S. troops of rounding up and deliberately shooting 11 people in the house, including 5 children, 4 women.
Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki has announced he will fill vacancies at the crucial defense and interior ministries over the weekend, despite failing to reach an agreement on candidates with Iraq's fractious ethnic and sectarian parties. The appointments, which must be approved by Parliament, are the keystone of al-Maliki's plan to take complete control of security around Iraq from U.S.-led forces within the next 18 months. In other news, more violence filled the streets of Iraq's capital as 2 bombs struck in quick succession at a pet market in central Baghdad, killing at least 5 people and wounding 57.
The U.S. and 5 other world powers have an offer they say Iran can't refuse if it knows what's best for it. Yesterday, the 6 nations came up with incentives they hope will persuade Tehran to stop suspect nuclear activities, but made it clear that Iran risks UN sanction if it rejects the package. The proposals were put together by the United States, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China. The package would be on the table for a proposed new round of bargaining with Tehran over what the West calls a rogue nuclear program that could produce a bomb. The U.S., in a major policy shift, agreed this week to join those talks under certain conditions. It would be the first major public negotiations between the adversaries in more than a quarter century. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice met with the foreign ministers from the European nations that led talks with Iran that stalled last year. Also present were representatives of Russia and China, which have been Tehran's trading partners and might join in any future talks with Iran.
Bagalcha is a remote tribal village in Pakistan, unremarkable except for its uranium mines. Nasir Badzar is a villager whose life has been changed by the uranium mines. He says, "We were the ones who helped make Pakistan a nuclear power, but now that we're suffering, there is no one to even hear us out." From 1978 to 2000, Bagalcha provided the secretive Pakistan Atomic Energy Commission, or PAEC, with the yellow cake it needed for its nuclear program. Now the local people in the district have gone to the Supreme Court with a complaint that nuclear waste dumped in the area had contaminated the environment and affected the health of both humans and animals. Some 50,000 people live in hamlets scattered around Bagalcha and the 500,000-strong population of nearby Dera Ghazi Khan have been affected. According to Pervez Hovoy, a physicist and internationally known peace activist, the fact that ordinary villagers who are normally frightened of confronting the government on even minor matters have dared to take the powerful PAEC to court was a sign of the enormity of the problem. This from Interpress News Service.
The Bush administration wishes to impose its will onto Chile's sovereignty and force that country to impede Venezuela's admission to the United Nations Security Council. That attempt came to light when the Chilean daily La Tercera published a report, based on Chilean diplomatic sources, titled White House Ultimatum. Progreso Weekly has translated that report and summarized it. During a visit by Chilean Foreign Minister Alejandro Foxley to the U.S. State Department on April 21, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice devoted an overwhelming proportion of her meeting with Foxley to only one issue, Venezuela's candidacy to the United Nations Security Council. She differentiated this issue from all other regional and multilateral decisions and said it singularly is in that it aims at the heart of U.S. interests. Foxley attempted to explain that Chile must consider the opinions of its neighbors and that in any case has not yet made a decision. But the Secretary of State was unequivocal. The United States will not understand a vote by Chile in favor of Venezuela at the Security Council. In October, the General Assembly of the United Nations must choose the five new rotating members who will join the Security Council on January 1st.
Police shot a man during a raid in East London early today and later arrested him on suspicion of terrorism, according to The Guardian. Neighbors said police quietly swooped down on a racially mixed neighborhood before dawn and surrounded the home of a man, his wife, and their four teenage children. They described seeing a man wearing a bloodstained T-shirt being carried out of the house. Metropolitan Police said the wounded man is suspected of instigating, preparing, and committing terrorist acts. Another man was arrested in the raid, but police did not say on what grounds.
That was the KBOO Morning News for Friday, June 2nd, 2006. Portland area weather, today showers likely, highs 65 to 70. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers, lows 50 to 55. Saturday, mostly cloudy, a chance of rain in the afternoon, high 70 to 75, lows 50 to 55. Sunday, showers likely, high 65 to 70. Sunday night, partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers, lows 50 to 55. Thanks for joining us for this morning's news. This morning's newscast was edited by Becca Bartelson and Chris Andre. Our engineer is Becca Bartelson. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Jake Wallner.
And I'm Chris Andre.
Coming up this morning on KBOO.